Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Wednesday, June 19th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont, and I apologize in advance. I'm really distracted because I found out that Harry Potter Wizards Unite is happening on Friday, and I'm super duper excited. With me today, I also have someone else very excited about Wizards Unite, and that would be Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Yes. You know, I actually thought it was Tuesday, so that's great that I'm one more day to Harry Potter.
You're even closer. Also with me today, who has no idea what Andrew and I are talking about, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
This is true. Good morning, Kelly.
John, I'm actually very glad you're here because I wanted to talk to you about a decision that you've made lately that is saving you a bunch of money on your AV habits.
Yeah, I wrote an article yesterday about why I'm not buying a 4K Blu-ray player. You know, when HD came out in 2007-8, roughly, got into full swing, it was a big deal. Blu-ray players had just won the war against HD DVD. There was a dramatic increase in quality from 480i to 1080p. If you bought a high-definition television, it was virtually certain you were going to upgrade your system, well, at least if you were technically minded, to a Blu-ray player. A lot of people didn't, however. I mentioned that in the article. Some people saw that as a sort of a technical ploy by the industry to get us to throw away our DVDs and replace them with Blu-rays. And there's still a pocket of interest in DVDs, and they're still being manufactured and sold, which mystifies me. But that's the way it is. However, 10 years later, streaming has taken hold, and Dolby Vision on 4K Blu-ray got it off to a rocky start.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about that here.
Yeah, so I waited and waited, and I figured by the summer of 18, I would buy a 4K Blu-ray player. Situation still hadn't resolved. In the meantime, I decided that I'm just going to stick with, I've got a lot of experience now watching 4K and HD with my Apple TV 4K, and seeing how streaming video scales up and how it looks on my 4K TV. And I'm pretty pleased. I can barely see the difference between HD and 4K. I can. Under most circumstances, but HD is so good, especially it's gotten better, I think, on Netflix. I'm watching Outlander on Netflix, and it's great picture quality.
Okay.
So I've decided that an investment in more plastic doesn't make sense for me, technically. And so I kind of told the story about my technical path through this process, starting in 2007, the upgrade to HD, and then the upgrade to 4K. And my experiences and the scaling issues. And also there's another issue, and that is that when in 2007, when Blu-ray discs were first starting to come out, it was a valuable commodity. Streaming wasn't in full force. Mm-hmm. And having a copy of the Bourne series or the Bond series or the Star Wars series, not Star Wars because I don't think that it came out on Blu-ray until later. But
it was much later, and it's a whole thing. We don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, that's right. So, but your favorite movies on Blu-ray are a joy, and it made sense because 1080p content was rare and a significant improvement over standard definition. Mm-hmm. Now the jump isn't so great. There's a glut of material. It's hard to keep up with all this great stuff that's out there. Mm-hmm. And there's more stuff that you can watch in a lifetime, and it doesn't make sense to try to supplement that with plastic unless you are a real certified video file who just has to have the best. And it is definitely better. I mean, you stream at maybe 10 to 25 megabits per second. Mm-hmm. A standard Blu-ray player 1080p will read data off the disc at 100 megabits per second. I haven't seen any numbers for 4K Blu-ray discs, but I'm guessing it's on the order of 200 megabits per second, which is a significantly greater speed than you're getting over the internet.
But oh,
still,
sure.
H.264 and H.265 are very good. And if the traffic isn't too heavy and the internet's working right, HD content can be stunning. Mm-hmm. So that's my story. And well, I kind of laid it out in a way that allowed people to make their own decision. I wasn't really hard over about it because I know there are people who just have to have 4K everything. And there's some good resources too if you want to do that.
Well, and the honestly, my favorite part of this was a phrase that you coined that I think I'm going to have to file away as part of my permanent vocabulary, and that is funds and sobriety dictated. Because I've been in that position many, many times. In fact, that's how I would characterize my iPhone 8 purchase 2 years ago, year and a half ago, because I knew I was going to get rid of it like in 2 years and I couldn't justify that money. So funds and sobriety dictated that I get an iPhone 8 instead of a 10.
I'm happy you like that phrase.
It's delightful, unbelievably accurate, and very efficient at communicating the point. And the thing, the other thing I thought was interesting about this is that it's mostly why you're not buying a 4K Blu-ray player now. Mm-hmm. And because at some point, the player that you have may break, and you still have physical media.
Right.
So you will want one.
Old. It's an LG, and it's 10 years old. It's still working great, but it's not going to last forever.
Yeah. My Oppo DVD player, or Blu-ray player, is getting up there in age, and that's part of why I was very interested to have this conversation with you, if anybody doesn't remember the previous iteration of John and I talking about Blu-ray players and 4K content. At some point, mine is going to go.
There's another advantage to having an older player, and that is when the players first came out with Blu-ray, there was some features that Blu-ray tried to support that required an internet access. Mm-hmm. And internet access is good for updating the firmware on your player. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, who knows what's happening on the internet connection or your Blu-ray player. Every disc you watch is probably being reported to somebody.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Odds are good. And I sort of like that mine is kind of dumb enough to not be doing that.
Yeah.
So.
Same here.
So instead of a Blu-ray player, what do you recommend instead? Like a 4K Apple TV?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. So and you have a 4K TV.
It's kind of funny that I'm the one explaining to John why I keep kicking it old school. And this is why. There are two huge reasons. Number one, I do not subscribe to every streaming service. So I don't necessarily have access to all of them.
Funds and sobriety dictate that.
Exactly. So part of the issue there is that things come and go from services all the time. So maybe I want to watch whatever it is, you know, let's say Doctor Who is an example. And I love Doctor Who, but Doctor Who's on Amazon Prime right now. And maybe I don't have Amazon Prime anymore. And so now Doctor Who's lost to me. So when I really want to go back and watch The Husbands of River Song, I need to have it on plastic in order to make that a reality. And the first reason is because a whole lot of things are not within my control when it comes to which content is on what service. So that's part of why I will still go buy a plastic slab of something that is very dear to me. Like Black Panther, for example, or Into the Spider-Verse, which is one of my favorite movies in the last few years. I will buy it. And inevitably, when The Rise of Skywalker comes out on a slab of plastic, I will buy the blue one. Because that's what I'm going to do.
Let me ask you something. And
yes.
This is key to the discussion.
Yes.
There's a collection of plastic discs, DVDs and Blu-rays sitting on your shelf.
Uh-huh.
And how many of them, what fraction of those discs have you watched more than 3 times?
All of them.
Really?
I don't have a vast library, but everything I buy because I want to watch it again and again and again and again.
I was expecting you to say maybe a third if you watch more than 3 times. That's amazing.
I've watched loads and I will say I cannot attest to it being 100% 3 times, but I guarantee I've watched every one of them at least twice. And some of them way more than 3 times. So, I'm in the process of wearing out Muppet Show DVDs and things like that.
I watch a movie and then when I buy it and then I watch it again maybe sometime in the future and then I move on. And like, there's just not enough time to go back and watch stuff over and over for me.
I made time to watch Wonder Woman again. I made time to watch Star Wars movies again. So, yes. So that's part of it. And the other part of it is, Andrew, have you seen Into the Spider-Verse? Mm-hmm. I love this movie. You should watch it. And I can hand him a copy and he can go home and watch it and then give it back to me when he's done. That's the other thing I like about this part of it. Instead of having to go, yeah, it's on Netflix. Good luck finding it. You know, that's the other reason that I like having these. So, like, I occasionally will loan a disc to a family member or a friend of mine. Like, you know, I didn't see that particular thing that you're talking about. Well, here, I can lend it to you. And it's easy. Mm-hmm. And there's no rights in the way. It's the same sort of debate that people have about paper books and ebooks.
Maybe that's why DVDs are still popular, because it's the lingua franca of the video world.
Yeah.
You loan somebody a DVD, chances are they'll be able to play it. You give them a Blu-ray disc and they'll go, oh, I never upgraded.
Well, a lot of people can still, there is a whole lot of Blu-ray playing that's happening. It may not be as much purchasing, but there's still a whole lot of like Blu-ray players out there, because it's hard to find one that's only DVD, and it's been that way for some time. You have to consciously seek out something that doesn't, that isn't a Blu-ray player that will also play silver discs, for example. So, like even...
Yeah, but there's still a lot of working DVD players out there that are only DVD.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah. But yeah, if you were to go buy a new one in the last 5 to maybe even 8 years, you probably have a Blu-ray player that plays all your DVDs. So
I wonder how many people understand that a Blu-ray player plays Blu-rays and DVDs and a whole lot of other stuff. Mm-hmm. And a 4K Blu-ray player plays 4K discs and HD discs and DVDs and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Mm-hmm. And the other, like there's so much, I think.
It's always backwards compatible.
Yeah. One of my, I don't remember if it was a DVD player or my other Blu-ray player, will play like photo CDs. And they all play audio. I can put audio in and play it through the big
CDs.
Speakers.
Yeah.
Which is also really nice. There are a lot of things like that that make it, that can make it more interesting as a device, as a usable device, in order to, you know, like any disc that you have, you can probably put in it and get it to play. So this is the other reason I like having it, you know. I have a whole lot of that particular format of media in various iterations, you know, burned CDs that I have made, purchased CDs that I have bought, DVDs of different things, Blu-rays of different things, and all of that can all play on the one device I have hooked up in my AV system.
So, but surely 4K plastic is the last of its breed.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Surely. I think we're done now with plastic. I don't think they'll ever make a leap to 8K discs.
I doubt it. Mostly because nobody's eyeballs are making that leap anytime soon. Yeah. So I just don't see it happening. But also because, well, there's a whole rights thing that gets into this, and DRM, and, you know, how do I keep everybody in the whole world from watching my copy of Into the Spider-Verse and all of that. So, which I own on plastic, for people wondering. So John's like, I don't buy DVDs. I'm like, I bought one 2 weeks ago. Anyway, so we will talk more about this when we find out more people are getting out of the Blu-ray player manufacturing business, or that movies stop coming out on disc. I'm sure we will sit here and talk about it.
Yeah, if you have any feedback or observations or interesting stories about your technical evolution, drop me a note. I'd be interested to hear it.
You can do that at observations@macobserver.com, and you can also catch this show at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can also leave comments in the show notes, and we'll make sure John gets those, and maybe you will see them in a future article, depending on how many people have stories to share. I also wanted to talk today to Andrew about something called openly operated. What can you tell us about this,
yeah,
Andrew?
Yeah, so it's a company that wants to change the way privacy policies kind of work. Mm-hmm. It was created by two people. One of them is a former iCloud engineer. And basically, openly operated, they want it to be a new type of certifications for apps and services. So in order to get what they call an OO certified certification, you have to meet three criteria. So first, your app or service needs to be it has to demonstrate a basic level of transparency by making its code open source. And it also has to, what they call, lay out its policy in the form of claims with proof. So basically, what you have to exactly spell out what you're doing with their data, your user data, who can access it, and how it's being protected. And then third, all of those claims need to be examined and by a third-party auditor.
Okay. And this is just limited. Excuse me. This is just limited to the terms of service, or is this for the entire application itself that you're trying to put terms around? Because I think you're... Go ahead.
Oh, it just sounds like it's maybe a combination of both the privacy policy and the terms of service.
Okay. Yeah. And they are their own certifying authority, which sounds sort of odd. But they are hoping to turn this into something that people can trust. And then when somebody like Andrew, who's automatically skeptical of most privacy practices anyway, if not policies, can go to something like Openly Operated, find out that this place and its privacy policy are legit, and see that it's been certified by this place as, you know, here's what happens, here's where your data goes, here's who gets to have hold of it, here's what we do to protect that data. And none of this sounds like, at least to me, none of this sounds like unreasonable demands to make on an agreement that you're about to enter into with some company.
Yeah. Now, a couple of important things. So this article was written by The Verge. Now, first of all, openly operated is voluntary.
Okay.
So I don't think it's quite going to be some kind of, you know, regulated standard.
No.
And more importantly, it also doesn't really tell you how private you need to be. So the example laid out by The Verge says companies could still do things like sell targeted ads or deal with data brokers. They just need to exactly spell out what they're doing in the terms of service. So they can't, you know, hide what they're doing behind words like analytics, for example.
Right. And now, to me, that's the part that's interesting, is like, we don't care what you're doing as long as you're upfront about it, because that's basically been my stance the entire time. Just tell me that you're going to sell everything that I give you to Facebook or LinkedIn or Google or whoever. Like, I don't care who it is, as long as you're upfront with me about that being what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Right? Because then it's my decision whether or not I want to enter into that particular relationship or not. You know what I mean? Like, that's why it seems to me that this is more interesting, you know, because it's all they want you to do is be upfront about it. And I think that's part of it. Part of the shady of a lot of this is, you know, analytics, right? Or, and other third parties, things like that. So, yeah.
And this could also be good not only for consumers, but also companies. Like, if one company wants to work with someone else and they know that they are OO certified, well, then they can, like, they know that they share similar security and privacy aspects.
Right. And it's just nice to have it all on the table ahead of time. So I think this is definitely something I'm interested in. John, how about you?
Yeah, it's always been amazing to me, the level of deception and maybe, if I can say it outright, cowardice on the part of some developers, to deceive the user into thinking that everything is great when in fact it isn't, and they're making money off the process. Mm-hmm. And I've often thought there was a need for certification authority. Like Underwriters Labs tests equipment and says, we put our blessing on it, it's safe. Mm-hmm. It's been properly built and constructed and it adheres to electrical standards.
That would be the little UL, the little UL logo you get like right. on a tag around an extension cord and things like
toaster.
That.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. So I think this is a great move. The problem with these kinds of things is that they don't catch on often, and they fall into disuse, and they don't become predominant, and then the customer is left with the situation still in disarray. If it takes off and it becomes a thing, that would be great, because then developers would have to consider that maybe their app is not OO certified, and that would be a competitive disadvantage, and that would be a good thing to mm-hmm. have OO succeed in that fashion. I hope it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, like I said, the upfrontness of it, and I don't know sometimes, John, how much of it is cowardice and how much is laziness. Like, we just don't want to have to sit down and outline all the places that we're working with to sell all your data to people. So we're just going to say in other third parties and call it good.
Well, I think if you had a meeting of the minds and you sat down with the developer and you had a customer interview, and then you say, did you know that developer's doing this? Is that okay with you? And the customer says, no, mm-hmm. I didn't know they were doing that. Would you have bought this app and used it if you'd known upfront what was going on with the app? No, I wouldn't have bought it.
Yeah. I tested software for a while at a company, and one thing that we joked about, because I used to have to go through and test the installer as part of the process, and one of the things I had to do was agree to the terms all the time, and so the guy that was writing the installer had to go fill in the terms. And so one time he put into it, like, this wasn't his name, but you know, he put into it like, you agree to pay Andrew $20. So I'm running through the installer, and I'm doing all the kind of things I can normally do to like break it and mess it up, make it all, you know, like figure out what problems the installer's having. And at one point he came over and he's like, have you installed the new version yet? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, you owe me money. I'm like, no, I don't. And he goes, you agreed to the terms. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
oh
yeah.
You're right, I do. And then so we decided that was a business model, that somebody was going to do that someday, just stash in the terms, you know, four paragraphs deep under like some yeah. subsection. Like, you agree. He decided that was going to be our business model. You agree to pay pay him and I $20 each. You know, and then we would just start finding people who installed it and go, you agreed, pay up. And, you know, like, we were sort of joking, but there's a whole lot of stuff in those terms that nobody reads. I mean, it's a punchline all the time, right? Like, how many times have you heard some comedian somewhere or some joke somebody makes about, like, well, you know, you didn't know you agreed to that because it was in the iTunes terms. Oh, you're right. Ha ha ha. Right. Like, we hear it constantly. So I'm very interested in having something like this get like, I don't even know who it would be, like, you know, EFF or somebody, like ACLU, somebody to just get, like, some other organization that's interested in truth and transparency and factuality, and get them to get behind something like this and go, yes, this is a thing that needs to happen. Everybody needs to know if this app is selling data to Facebook or Google or keeping it for itself. And racking up profile information on people.
I have a question about that. OO yeah. doesn't explicitly disclose to potential purchasers what the level of privacy is. All they do is insist that the terms of service match what the app does. Mm-hmm. It's between OO and the developer, right? But there's nothing that says they're going to disclose to the end user anything insidious about the terms. Is just ensuring that they do, that the developer does what they say they do.
Right. And that's all I want.
Which still doesn't inform the user sufficiently.
Well, it does say that the auditor who does the audit of the privacy and security claims, that audit will be made public. So at least we can see, yes, they're doing what they say they're going to do. Absolutely are selling all of your non-identifiable information to Facebook. Okay. Now I know. Like, and that's really all I've wanted all along.
That's true. Okay.
So, because it doesn't matter. Like, if you're doing it, you probably don't think it's shady, but maybe I do. And now I know. And I can go into that relationship with my eyes open. And that's all I ever wanted with any of this, was just awareness. What exactly are you doing mm-hmm. with my data? And, you know, that's why I don't use those buttons, the login with Facebook or login with Google buttons or any of that, you know, because I don't need extra stuff tied to those particular profiles. And I don't know what happens to that data.
And on their website, they do mention that. They say, we know that there are a lot of ways companies can be dishonest and mislead users. So OO companies have to have some kind of tamper-proof audit trail.
Awesome. I'm super into this. Yeah. I hope we can talk about it more. Nice. That would be great.
Yeah. So you can go to openlyoperated.org, and they do say if you're a developer who's interested in this, all their tools and reports and specifications are free.
That's awesome. I'm looking forward to this. I think it's interesting, and I really want to know more about how they're going to do this. And I would like for this to, I definitely, like you, Andrew, I would really like if this were to take off. So I think it would be great. And with that, when we find out more, if it turns out they end up being a bigger deal, we will definitely talk about them here. And in the meantime, thanks both of you for being here today. Andrew, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
John, thanks for being here today to talk to me about your not new Blu-ray player.
It was fun to be here. Thanks.
I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. Until then, be excellent to each other.